Hello, Leo, and welcome to The Awakening, your 2025-26 reading from Planet Waves. Just FYI, I'm having a little bit of minor respiratory distress from the cold, dry air and the artificial heat, so I may not be up to my usual a booming voice, and we'll have to clear my throat here and there, so hopefully not too disturbing. It has taken me a while to think about how to begin this reading, and here is what I've come up with. Like, I pondered all night, and I mean, I had already written your written reading and 10 million horoscopes and all this. It would seem that the awakening is a kind of a science fiction novel about how to maintain your humanity in the midst of a clear global assault on the human form. And this is coming from many, many directions. And they all have one thing in common, which is some form of artificial intelligence, digital technology, and being networked in to the kind of global synthetic thought web. And you are a kind of a protagonist in this novel. And you are not one because you want to be one, I don't think. I think you're one because you are in a position to perceive a problem in a way that other people cannot quite see it. And you are also in a position to take loving and creative approaches to the situation. And so this kind of elevates your consciousness and, you know, we might say makes your role more important than it might ordinarily be. Now, Leo is ruled by the sun, which is at the center of the solar system. And this is the kind of leadership of Leo, holding it all together. However, one of the leading situations in this digital takeover of humanity, which has been going on for a while and has reached a number of peaks as we have gone deeper and deeper into what I call full digital conditions, and now we're well into Web3 with artificial intelligence giving these concise responses and helping people write articles and helping lawyers write letters, and they had to teach it to not make up citations. But the reality is that we are slowly being swallowed by synthetic thought. And the problem with synthetic thought is that it lacks imagination and it lacks emotion. There's no possibility for empathy, and in truth, no possibility for growth, and it is not relational. And the most difficult thing is it's teaching all of us to be like it. That's always happens, is that the prevailing technology teaches us to be like it. Now, my sense of why this is so central to your experience is that you're going to be looking at Pluto in Aquarius, straight across the dial, your opposite sign, for a little under 20 more years. And Aquarius is one of several of kind of crime scenes of the transhuman takeover. And we see this in the extremely rigid patterns that have been formed as the world has gone from social to social media, which really is not social. It is a complete misnomer, but everyone still uses the concept. And, you know, there's really nothing there except addiction and transformation into the, you know, something other than a person. So just briefly covering what it means to have Aquarius on the 7th, that is naturally social. You are someone who easily can accommodate a fair number of people around you. You know, you like being part of things. And what has happened is that the crystallization property of Aquarius has gone into overdrive. And that means that the patterns are set. They become set, and they become very rigid. And people's thought forms become set and rigid as a result of all this exposure to this technology, which is quite overwhelming, and we don't call it that. We've just sort of kind of gone along for the ride. You know, the temperature went up so slowly, we didn't know when to scream. And what happens with Pluto in this location in your chart, which is all about your relationships and all about the wider environment in which you live. It's two things. Seventh house is two things. It's a general read on the walk around world, the everyday world that you see. And it's also about your relationships, partnerships. And with Aquarius, there's important group partnerships. And these can get, even prior to digital, cliquish. That's the thing about Aquarius. And Aquarius has a kind of exclusionary property to it. But this is now gone to the hilt. And what Pluto is doing, first of all, is it's going to emphasize this environment. In addition to changing the environment and representing opportunities in the environment and representing disruptions to the environment, in the first instance, we can say that it's going to be emphasized. And this is why I suspect that you are in a position to be a witness and to help lead the people around you out of this, or at least to hold up some kind of a beacon such that you are not completely swallowed and they are not completely swallowed. And I don't mean to sound too alarmist here, but this is getting serious. And we are in a situation now where tech billionaires run the world. I mean, there's no escaping this now. And they are heavily involved in the Now the new administration taking over. We saw an uprising of this whole tech environment in 2020 and 2021, which was nothing more than a big tech, big pharma, massive control drama, and a kind of a rehearsal. And in any profound human critical situation, there are the people who are able to maintain their balance and maintain their sense of reality and get through it and help others do so. But we've never seen anything like this. And so I am being perhaps overly optimistic, but I don't really have a choice. I'm not here to say that, you know, we're going down. But I'm also here to say that there's going to be ways that we don't go down, and that you have access to a number of the keys to help this process of people remaining human along. Right now, Mars is retrograde. As of today, it's I'm recording on Christmas Eve. Mars is retrograde in Leo, and it's about to back into the second of three oppositions to Pluto. And then early next year, it will come back. And so this, too, emphasizes your involvement, because to me, it shows you probing the environment, testing the waters, and experimenting, and you know, seeing what results you get. There's also something about asserting your will with Mars. There is something about working out past difficult emotions. Emotions that have been turned on yourself, resentment-type emotions and guilt-type emotions. And as Mars retrogrades, it's going to make its second opposition to Pluto very early in the new year, I think around the second or third or something like that, and retrograde back into your 12th place, where it's going to be for a while. And here is an opportunity to kind of observe and make friends with your emotional fears. And this is a very positive thing, in my view. I think underneath all of the craziness of the world, underneath all of the frenetic madness and the instability, the intellectual and cultural instability, the political instability, the coldness, is fear of being alone. And if you can stay in touch with that fear, even though you're not alone, you will be able to relate to people in a more realistic way, and be more available and accessible to them. And so this Mars retrograding into Cancer, into your 12th, where it's, I don't have all the dates. The dates are at various places. But we're talking about the rest of the winter and part of the spring, with Mars hanging around in the late degrees of Cancer. This may come with some emotional turbulence. But Mars retrogrades almost always help you settle a matter. They almost always reveal something that needed to be healed, and then suddenly you've got it. You know, you've got it where you can see it. You've got it where you can give it a name. You can handle the feelings. And so what I would suggest is keeping a pulse on your fear level and learning how not to suppress that. I think it is the suppression of fear that makes it so impossible to deal with, because it always squeezes out into a new way. And having Cancer on the on this, you know, deeply mystical 12th house of your hidden self, reveals you to deep down, and really, you don't have to go very far to find a person who is, you know, profoundly emotionally sensitive. And so, if you're ever feeling fear, it is fair to you know, put a pin in the map and recognize who is in a much, much worse situation. And it is this cultivation of empathy that will allow you to cultivate trust and to help weave your community on the basis of emotional bonding. This can be your family, it could be your neighbors, it could be people in your workplace. And, you know, the sad truth is that most people aren't really that interested in being vulnerable to one another, and you got a lot of people acting like they're an island of some kind, and, you know, we know that's not true, and that is not helpful. One thing to be aware of is that you are working with a lot of energy right now. A combination of factors in Leo, early Leo, describe kind of a boundless well of energy, and it is very important that you learn how to manage that energy and not let it run away. An energy can represent any emotion at all. So that's the thing one. And also motivation. So you are in a very motivated place right now, and I think that it will benefit you to attenuate that motivation, which means kind of step it down a little bit and be more precise about it, to make very small welds, small solders, small adjustments, micro adjustments to your energy, you know, rather than coming on at full force, particularly till this Mars retrograde works itself out, which will take a while, and it'll take a while past Mars retrograding into new territory, because, you know, this is half of it's happening in Leo, half of it's happening in Cancer. These are both very personal representations for you. And so learning how to thoughtfully manage your energy flow will be one of the most beneficial things you can do. And there's a lot of power sources here. And the beauty of your charts right now is that while you're looking right at Pluto, right in your seventh place, and while you are experiencing this kind of real-time stress test of Mars retrograde, there are many positive and creative vents for your creativity, for your power. Now, before we get into those, I want to just repeat my comment about the three probable modes of Pluto in Aquarius. And I would encourage you to think back to the spring of 2020 and really make a honest assessment of how you responded and what you did. And no matter how badly you were fooled or pressured into doing things that were completely unlike you or not, you want to have an evaluation of that, because that happened under Saturn in Aquarius, which Saturn enters Aquarius in early 2020. And so the Saturn Aquarius phase, which was about 2.5 years, was the lockdown phase. And Pluto in Aquarius dwarfs this in terms of the potential widespread assertion of power over people. So the first mode of Pluto in Aquarius is that the group overpowers the individual who is you. Now, you don't have to look too far to see this. People tend to be very susceptible to group dynamics. One of the most primal fears of a human being is exclusion from the tribe or exclusion from the family. And there are a great many people who will do almost anything to never have to subject themselves to exclusion. Aquarius is a kind of a tribal influence. And, you know, you might say it's the official sign of tribes. And there's no I in tribe. Tribes completely exclude individuals. Unless you're the chief, the shaman, the chief's daughter, the shaman's daughter or son, the lead hunter, everybody else is not really a self. And it's amazing how not far humans have come from this. Okay, second mode, Pluto and Aquarius, is individuals pushing back against this dynamic of the group seizing volition control of individuals. And we saw quite a bit of this in 2020 and 2021. It has since largely gone to shit with many of those who, in theory, were bravely resisting, now becoming, well, in the words of the Clash Long, they're working for the clampdown. But the crisis helped create people into certain individuals, into people whose integrity stood the test and the challenge. And so the question is, where do you see yourself in this? And it takes many, many different kinds of abilities and skills and a measure of evolution to not only not succumb to the pressure, but to stand up to it, to or organize against it, because the fear is always of being crushed. So, therefore, those who stand up to this have to really kind of risk everything. Third option. The group itself evolves. Now, I came up with this one a couple of years ago, and I cannot think of examples of the group itself evolving in such a way that does not devolve fairly quickly, that does not come unraveled, or where the evolutionary breakthrough is not seized upon by some individual who takes over. But we have to leave this open, this possibility open, for group evolution. And if you can think of group evolutions that worked, where any group of people, let's say three or more, was able to advance the collective soul, I'm interested in hearing about this. I mean, you know, good rock band, there's often group evolution, but sometimes there's not. Sometimes, a couple of people in the band want to keep doing the same old album over and over again, but then there are times when they don't want to do the same album over and over again. The Beatles were an example of this. Radiohead is an example of this. There are some others. So I'm leaving that possibility open for group evolution. And I suspect that it's not the kind of thing that can be planned for. It's not the kind of thing that can be set up. It's most likely to be something that you will just find yourself mysteriously part of. The promise theme for the audio readings is vocation, calling, career. Here in the digital age where suddenly almost everyone is in business for themselves, even if you're a teacher or a cop, everybody's got a side hustle. The side hustle often involves digital technology in some way, whether you work for the Navy by day and you build websites by night, et cetera, et cetera. But what is interesting about Leo's configuration is the movement away from those traditional work angles and into basically the next place where the achievements of the recent, in the case of Uranus, 7 years, Pluto about 15, 16 years, come to fruition. So just to sum up how that looked as far as a past influence goes, there are two houses that that have easy access to work and vocation, which means calling. I don't really like the word profession, professing or proffering. I don't know what, but I prefer calling vocation. But for some people, they do consider their vocation to be a professional calling. And those are houses 6 and 10. House 6 is the workaday world. It's where you go to work every day. There's almost always a where in a house. And house 6, the where is the office. It's also the healing room. It is the gym. It is a place where a service is proffered, the first service being military service in the sixth. And if I'm reading this correctly, the medical angle on the sixth came from basically battlefield medicine, because the sixth is also the doctor's office. Okay, so Pluto has been going through Capricorn and, you know, finally finished in November. From early 08, 1 year trail in, out to late 20, out to 23 and late 24, almost 2 years because of the double ingress into Aquarius. What Pluto has done is basically rearranged everything in its path. And so Capricorn represents tradition, it represents structure, it represents the, you know, stalwart brands like Ivory Snow or ExxonMobil, so forth. And the post office and the government and the stock market and anything that is a structured part of society. And Pluto's come through like kind of a demolition derby here. You're doing very well if you have not come out of this with any significant health issues. The stress level of this for you was pretty high. This sense of being compelled to adapt and respond all the time to changes in your immediate environment. So there's there's an immediacy to both the sixth and the seventh, but the sixth is contained in the workspace and the daily tasks, the quotidian tasks, and the seventh is a much wider space. So Pluto, from the reports coming in from the field, nothing is the same where somebody had Capricorn in their chart. And for you, this represents work and well-being. And now Pluto has moved into the seventh place for you, solar house, seventh or whole sign if you're Leo rising. And this is emerging from that series of transformations and being much more visible. There's a number of places where visibility is indicated, and one of them is when a planet emerges into place seven. There's an increase in speed because the sixth tends to be slow, and an increase in visibility because the sixth tends to be a bit concealed behind the scenes, and then the seventh is right out in the open. What legacy is left here is very important. And this is a diversity of placements associated with heritage, lineage, family. I've been referring to this over and over again as the family Hunger Games. I'm putting that little red bar next to that group of planets, Pholus, Quasar, Ixion, and Cupido, with many visitors coming in. The sun now is in Capricorn, about to pass through there, and so on. And by the way, how you are responding to this cluster, the last 10 days of 2024 will tell you something about how you are manifesting this. But talking about it as a creative concept, as a resource, an accessible resource, you are likely to be a beneficiary of and teacher of tradition. Because, Pluto has run this demolition course through Capricorn. But in its wake, we have two planets associated with heritage, Quasar and Pholus, and one associated with gathering, including of families, and one associated with the dark side, that is Ixion. So it is somewhat of a mixed bag, and Pholus brings in the theme of alcohol, which is a theme to keep your finger on the pulse of at all times. It is alcohol is this thing that is taken for granted. No restaurant can survive without a liquor license. It's quite disturbing. People tend to drink their meal. The part of their check that's the drink part of their check is often more than the food part. I personally don't understand this, but this is the way it is. That said, you have access to a lot of innate knowledge about tradition. And innate knowledge of tradition as passed to you down the eons by your family through your lineage, and also this counts for tribal lineage, not just immediate family, but the total tribe of all of the Irish immigrants or whatever. And digital is very hard on tradition. It is a memory hole. It swallows everything in its path. And digital is very hard on acquired knowledge. And the most important acquired knowledge is, for example, how to grow food, how to read and write, how to raise children so they turn out to be decent people. And you have access to this information. You have access to this in a kind of a mainline, a direct, you know, a direct point of contact. Now, there, you know, in terms of work, the work that is going to be the easiest to get is going to be the traditional professions. Basically, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, and all of the derivatives of those things. And this is because digital retrieves very old things. You know, it swallows things, but then it, you know, mysteriously, you know, throws up a tendency for young people to want to be farmers, for example. And so I suggest you look at what is being retrieved. But more than that, that you learn handcrafts. I was talking about this like around 2008 in the 2008-2009 annual edition about, I think the article was called Everything Old is New Again. And this is happening. It's just not happening that much, but it can certainly be happening for you. And you don't need to, you know, make money on your ability to garden and can food. You have more than enough when you have the food, right? So that's a bit about the kind of quotidian daily calling of the sixth house, and it would be beneficial to kind of roam around the ruins of the planet and find all the people in your community doing traditional things, and they are there. They're just not necessarily, advertising and skywriting. All right, next item, 10th place. 10th place is about bold action, acting on your intent, praxis, and it is about being known for things, and also the benefits of building a reputation. Now, this too has fallen on hard times in digital, where you know anyone can just like remake a website, and nobody has to know who and where you are, etc., etc. There has been this high power transit going on. It's not over. There's still about another year left, but we start to come out of it in July. And that has been Uranus going through your 10th place. Uranus and Taurus. Now, this is a major contradiction, because Taurus wants stability. Taurus is the, you know, it's kind of the ultimate fixed sign. But Uranus wants to change every last thing in its path. And so there has been a lot of, to me, this looks like internal pressure to adapt to a world that you probably would be fine without, but it's not the world that we're in. And as Uranus moves into Gemini, which takes place over mid 25 into early 26, it kind of breaks free. And everything that you learned in the previous 7 years suddenly finds a mode of easy expression. Now, Uranus is very technological. It's a little chilly. It's not entirely human. Look at the glyph. It's like that H. It almost looks like the glyph for Atlantis. But this is you acting in your social world. Very similar to Pluto in Aquarius. In your 7th, Uranus in Gemini. In your 11th, it is the same thing expressed in a very different way. And also, Uranus is much faster acting. But there's a very important bit here that Uranus can have a bit of a bull in the china shop, feeling. Uranus topples things, and you don't want to be doing very much toppling. What is guiding you to not topple is the environmental sensitivity provided by Sedna. And Sedna entered, after being in Taurus since 1966, Sedna entered Gemini last year. No, this year. It happened between 23 and 24. It'll be there till 2066. And this is the extraordinarily high sensitivity to the social environment. So in terms of what you do every day, that is a very good resource. It doesn't get better than that. To have sensitivity to the actual zeitgeist, to be able to adjust your thoughts and your actions and how you present yourself to what is happening in the world around you that is largely invisible. That's the thing with the zeitgeist. It finally manifests in a visible form. But at first, it's below liminality. But what Sedna is giving you is the ability to go below normal waking consciousness and to actually read the environment. This is great for anything that you're doing. It is fantastic for consulting. You will have a true sixth sense about what is important to people and why it's important to people. And your knowledge may not, you may not be able to, pin down how you know something. You may not be able to have footnotes, but you certainly will be able to, get a result by just sharing your awareness and test yourself. Test yourself, with what you think is coming and what you think things mean and how you think that people are going to respond to the incredibly wild events of the spring of 2025. And see where you and the people around you fit in. Now, last item. The Aries factor. This sequence of events going on in Aries was a major factor in most of the readings, though I gradually moved away from it and developed other themes. But it's all over, like Aries, Taurus, and Gemini, and so you'll find it in there. It's on the Awa. But two things happen in Aries. Three things. One is that the conjunction of Chiron and Eris comes into perfection in the spring, and that lasts a year. And this is really going to stir the pot. If you thought things were interesting in the spring of 2024, wait till you see the spring of 2025. Spring of 2024 was an eclipse conjunct Chiron. Spring of 2025 is going to be Chiron, Eris in a conjunction, and the sun will pass through there late in Aries, Aries time, probably around like April 18th or 17th. So keep an eye on that. And the personal piece of this for you is a kind of an overthrowing of the neurosis of your parents, particularly your mother. Now, not to be too disparaging of moms, but a lot of them are kind of neurotic, and pass that on to the wee ones, which was you. And so when you come up against something, it's likely to be your mother's unprocessed psychological material. Remember that. If you know where to look, if you're experiencing any form of turbulence, if you're experiencing any form of, you know, personal spiritual challenge, consider that what this has to do with her worldview, what it has to do with her state of mind, and you know, what wouldn't she have done? What would have terrified her? How would she be responding to the situation that you are seeing in the world? The beauty of having Aries in the ninth place, which is what you have, is that it is a reminder that the ultimate spirituality is self-development. We do not need to be worshiping gods. We do not need to be joining the priesthood. We do not need to be having crusades. All that's ninth house stuff. What we need to be is human. And that is what Aries on the ninth house says. And this is so deeply infused into the Leo soul that there's no... Not only is there no escaping it, you don't want to. You can thrive on understanding that human potential, that the actualization of self, that the growth and emergence and profound personal development is the ultimate spiritual statement. Now, a bunch of planets are going to enter Aries as well. One is this little guy named Borsisi, which is about belief. And I don't quite really know how to read this, but it is an indicator that says that what you believe about yourself is the thing that you're likely to experience as true. So therefore, be careful what you believe about yourself. And then over this 18-month special year that we're about to enter, Neptune and Saturn enter Aries. And this is about the synthesis of the synthesis of your being. This is perhaps the greatest invitation you've ever had in your life to think of yourself in your highest potential, and to aspire to your highest potential, rather than all the other options. And the thing with the ninth is the thing with the human race is that everyone's trying to sell you something to believe about yourself that's not true. Every TV commercial, every cop, every politician, every minister and priest and religion and pharmaceutical company, all of this is about seizing hold of you and convincing you that something that is not true is true. Therefore, you should do a certain thing, buy this thing, get this drug, whatever. And here, basically, you're being dealt a wild card, where you can choose what, basically, who and what you become. And so, these planets have been through a very complex journey through a relationship house, the eighth. And the most important thing to know about the eighth with Pisces on it is that relationship can only exist in a condition of truth. All forms of mendacity and withholding and all that, all of that swallows relationships. It makes them seem like there's no love and there never was any love. And there's always, when that happens, there's always a piece of us left out. There's always a fragment of the soul that is the thing that would complete the picture, and that to me looks like Nessus. And so what I would propose here is that as part of your dharma, part of you know, part of you are stepping into this incredible, beautiful promotion that you're going to get, that you're going through now, is a total devotion to relationship for truth. And that means not having withholds from your partners or partner. And it means being honest about who you are and what you want in life, and being willing to encounter what the people around you want and who they are, being magnanimous, being open-minded, being loving, and trusting, and worrying less about the consequences, and concerning yourself with the idea that unless you're living in reality, you're not living anywhere. And the most important reality is who you are. And in a relationship, the equally most important reality is who your partner is. And we all know this. All right, that is what I have to say to you today. Thank you for trusting me with such sensitive matters, and for your continued business, and I'll catch you somewhere around the dial. Signing off from New York at 10:52 a.m. on Christmas Eve in Kingston. Lots of love, and bye for now.